Hey, listen up.
Yeah, we here and we locked in. Let's keep it going all the way to the top 10. We fear the turtle, so it's no other option. Fred and Ryan, just watch them. Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
What's up, everybody? It's episode 12 of the Shell and Tell podcast. Fred and Ryan here, 15 minutes removed from another big Terps win. 10-0, our hoop squad starts the season off.
10-0, and it feels so good, baby.
Yeah, man. This is a game the team really had no business winning for so many reasons. You got Cockburn. You've got flat fouls being called all over the place, mainly on a squad that was wearing yellow jerseys. Poor shooting, so many reasons.
Yeah, both the refs and the announcers were pretty poor. The refs called every offensive foul possible on the yellow team, and the announcers couldn't say Cockburn's name right. Yes. They kept saying Coburn.
So if you don't know who Cockburn is, that would be who they were calling Coburn, but his name clearly said Cockburn on the back of his jersey.
I mean, I'm not an English major, but I think I would have seen the class where CK sounds like either an H or just non-existent.
Oh, you mean...
Silent CK. I missed that
episode.
You
missed that day where they talked about the CK is silent.
Yeah, I even looked up a Hooked on Phonics video so that we could explain
maybe
what
it's
the
a
sound
French
of
thing.
CK is.
He looked French.
Yeah, just because you want your name to not be Cockburn does not mean your name's not Cockburn.
Oh, that was great. But yeah, man, huge, huge win. Man, it came down to the wire with yet another big shot.
Ayala killed the dribble. Now Smith for Cowan with 9 to shoot. Cowan for the tie.
Oh,
from Northern Virginia.
This is a game, man, that kind of goes along with how they've been playing all year. Another slow start that ends up turning around in the second half, comes down to a big shot, and the Terps end up pulling one out.
That was our last tie or lead since leading 3-2.
Yeah.
3-2, and we're under 30 seconds tying it up.
I had pretty much chalked this one up as a loss. Going into halftime, I mean, listen, we've had some slow starts already this year, and we've looked bad at times this year. But this game, just all around, we just weren't playing aggressive. We were getting out-rebound. We were getting out-muscled down low. And again, the refs were just calling everything. Anytime we drove to the hoop, it was a charge. I don't know how many charging calls were made in this game. It was ridiculous.
At least four.
At least. It just seemed like everything was going against the Terps, and this was a game that was like, okay, maybe this is the punch in the mouth that this team's going to need going into the Big Ten. You hate to lose your opening game in the Big Ten.
Who wants to be last place in the Big Ten when you were 9-0?
Yeah, right.
That's not a good look.
But that goes for not as the they figure it out, man. I said it.
Tied for first in the Big Ten. That's the only option when it's your first game, first or last.
We got down to that like 7 or 8 minute mark, and I said, man, I don't even care if they win this game by one. Just figure out a way to win this game, ugly or not. And look, the one thing that you can really, really hang your hat on with this squad is they play super tight defense. I mean lockdown defense. All across the board. We're not just talking Sticks, and we're not just talking Wiggins, who are two standout guys defensively. Everybody on the floor plays good defensive basketball.
Yeah, our top eight play lockdown defense. When you're talking Dante Scott off the bench was playing great defense. Sorrell Smith even had a sighting playing good D out there and making smart decisions.
Exactly.
Everybody is playing great D out there.
You end up holding Illinois to shooting 21% from three. They were shooting right around 40% from the field. Again, two big dudes down low, one of which was pissing us off pretty good throughout the game because he was just throwing elbows left and right and getting away with it, not getting called.
Yeah, finally got called like 5 minutes left and he was all sad about it. But he could have had about five or six other calls in there.
Yeah, this was a game where, again, the Terps showed where even if a team's going to play bigger basketball, they've got bigger guys, stronger guys down low, they can still figure out a way to find a win.
Yeah, big games across the board. We got Anthony Cowan, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, and 20 points. Obviously, that huge shot. That 6 assists is really the thing that stands out for me. That's the most in this 5-game stretch since our last show.
right.
Of any player, much less just him. That's so big that he's getting other people involved.
Yeah, and I don't think he had his first 2 points in this game until damn near the end of the first half.
Yeah, it's a slow start. I mean, as much as we were behind at half at 14-point deficit, it could have been so much worse. Yeah. I mean, they were hitting every circus shot there was. That lockdown defense kept us in the game a little bit. I mean, most people at down 14 at half, it's just over. We've seen this play before. So that lockdown D kept us in shouting distance, and that's what we needed was shouting distance.
Right, you mentioned it, trailing by 14. It was 39-25 at half. We were shooting 30% from the field, 21% from three on 3 of 14 shooting. Just, again, the same kind of script that we've seen from this team game in and game out. So my thing with that is we're still 10-0, you know, and over this last couple of weeks, we've played some pretty good teams. We started to kind of get out of the cream puff portion of the schedule. We went through the Orlando Invitational, ended up winning that tournament. We're going to talk a little bit about what we saw from there, some guys that we liked, some guys that we didn't. But look, we dominated that championship game against Marquette, so things are starting to look up. If this team can start to shoot the ball well from three, because look, like it or not, they're not going to be that banger, down low, low post game type of team. They're going to be a, you know, shoot from three, shoot from deep type team. And if they can keep themselves in the games defensively like they have, man, if they start hitting some buckets, they're really going to be blowing people out.
Yeah, the thing is, they are like a shoot and slash team. So if you start hitting these threes on a more frequent basis, you're going to pull that defense out a little bit and let those drives to the bucket for Morsell and for Cowan be a lot more wide open, because everybody's got to play honest instead of sucking back into the key.
Right. No, I completely agree. Let's start with our first segment of the show.
Shells like team spirit.
So if you didn't listen to last week's episode, Ryan and I added a couple of different segments to the show. This one's called Shells Like Team Spirit, and this is kind of our hot and not category, where each of us kind of gives us, since our last episode, who we think has been playing good ball and who we think hasn't been playing good ball and needs to step up. For me, I'll start this week off, because last week you started off. I'm going to take the obvious. I'm going to take Jalen Smith on this one. You know, for me, there's a couple of guys that could have gotten this, because there's a couple of guys playing really good basketball right now. But I think what Jalen Smith was able to do over the course of these last couple of games, I mean, against Notre Dame, for instance, 15 points, 16 boards, and 5 blocks. I mean, he's been playing lights out basketball. Against Harvard in the tournament, 15 points, 10 boards. Again, we talk about playing lockdown D. He's the best defender on this squad right now, I would say. Between him and Wiggins, it's kind of a toss-up which way you go. But I'm starting to accept, because I've been one to give Jalen criticism in the sense that he's such a big body, you know, now that he's put on that extra weight up top, that I'd like to see him be that more traditional four, the guy that can use his strength, use his power down low to get high percentage shots. I'm just going to have to accept that that's not Jalen's game, that he's going to be this jump shooting big man, this quote unquote stretch four that started with the kind of Kevin Durant, you know, era at that point, where he was playing at 7 foot. He was playing almost like a guard. And now in the NBA, he is a guard. We're starting to see these athletic big men. I'm just going to have to accept that that's part of Jalen's game. He's not a banger down low. He just doesn't look comfortable down low. And he's starting to kind of flourish in this role.
It's harder to accept with him than our previous stretch fours, our Jake Layman's, because Jake Layman looked like a stretch four. He looked like he shouldn't be down low. When you look at Jalen Smith, he looks like a beast. Looks like he should be playing tight end somewhere or something.
Right.
So you want him to go down and dominate.
Right.
But he can on the defensive end a little bit.
He absolutely can.
You see him swatting balls into the third row, and you see him bodying up. On the offensive side, he's got fadeaway jumpers,
yeah,
when he should be dropping the shoulder in what we're looking for out of that body type.
Right.
And the pop in the three. I mean, he hit a couple this game. He hit more this game than I think he's hit all year. I'd have to double check. But
there was a video of him going around in warmups. I want to say he made like 6 threes in a row. So the kid can shoot. There's no doubt that he can shoot. I just get frustrated because I'm that traditionalist. You know, I'm that old school basketball fan. The Lonnie Baxters, you know, like the big body guys that were down low, grabbing all the boards and putting back the easy shots on, you know, offensive rebounds. We just don't see a whole lot out of that, out of sticks in that sense. And I thought that that would be an area that we'd see him transition more into, especially with Bruno leaving and going to the NBA and leaving that void down low.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a void with missing Bruno today, because Cockburn was a handful down there, and you needed
Cockburn. Right?
You needed a guy to box out that cock.
I wasn't gonna go there, but all right. Ryan, who have you seen and been impressed with this week?
You know, I got to give it to Anthony Cowan. I held off because I originally thought I was going that direction, but that Notre Dame game, this is five games we're covering here, kind of what we're at. So you're talking Temple, Harvard, Marquette, Notre Dame, and now against the Illini today.
Right.
So the little dud there against Notre Dame, where he had two rebounds, two assists, and 9 points, held it off until this game, but obviously with that big shot, with, like I said, six assists being the most of anyone on the team, his 101 points over these five games, the most of anyone on the team, averaging 20 points a game.
Yeah,
he's lighting it up from all over the place. Again, some of these games are not complete games. Most of them aren't complete games, where he's had to do it in the second half, where he's had to, you know, go on runs to get them. But at the end of the day, he's got them.
Right.
And some of it is late, and some of that might go back to what we talked about earlier this year, where you want a fresh Cowan late in the game. Nobody else is fresh. A fresh Cowan versus a not fresh anybody is going to blow him away.
That was going to be one of my questions to you, is I've noticed over the last few games his minutes have gotten pretty high, almost close to 40. I mean, he's been in the high 30s in some of these games. Does that concern you?
So the only game that's truly concerning is Marquette. So he was at 38 minutes for Marquette. But the weird outlier there is that Jalen Smith only played 22 minutes.
Yeah.
That's nowhere near Jalen Smith's normal numbers. I'm looking across the board. We got 29, 30, the 22, 28, and I don't have today's minutes number, but I'm sure it's close to 30, 34 minutes.
Yeah, in that range.
In today's game. So that 22 minutes is the outlier that throws off that. Outside of that, Cowan has been mostly in the low 30s. I guess I was dreaming, thinking that we shouldn't have any players over 30 minutes. We were going to go a lot deeper.
Yeah. That's if the talent's equal across the board. It's easy to say that, but
it looked
Cowan's
like it
your most dominant player, you know, and he's your senior leader. You got to have him out on the court.
And it looked like it was going to be a little more equal when we were in your, quote, powder cup puff schedule earlier. Right. So we thought we were going to get way more minutes from other people on the bench. We thought we'd get way more Lindo minutes.
Yeah.
He's almost evaporated. The Twins, Sorrell Smith, all these players we thought we'd get at least, you know, portions. I'm not talking 30-minute portions, but I'm talking 5 to 10-minute portions, and they're not even getting that most games.
Right. Now, that's true. So let's talk about a couple of guys that maybe we'd like to see a little bit more from. And for me, it's got to be Aaron Wiggins still. You know, I think he's had flashes where he's kind of looked like his old self. He'll go on a little bit of a runs at later in games when it looks like he gets a little bit more confidence in himself, but it looks like in the beginning he just kind of disappears. I don't know if it is a confidence thing or what. Defensively, he's great. He plays great defensive basketball. That's not my problem. This is a kid that as a freshman was shooting 40% from three, and he's not doing that right now. Right now he's got 30 minutes a game, 10.8 points a game, and he's shooting 36% from the field as a whole. Versus Harvard, in 36 minutes, he was 4 of 14 shooting. So, I mean, he's just, again, in this game that we just watched, 3 of 11 shooting. You know, he had 8 points in this game. This is a guy that everybody was hyping up as NBA talent. And I'm not saying that he doesn't have the ability to be an NBA player.
He's shown the skill, and that's why you want more from him.
Right, and I think that's what it is. I think it's I'm a little bit just...
When you see that putback dunk off his missed three.
Oh, man, that play I texted you about was one of the most ridiculous plays I've ever seen. So, again, that was one of those stretch flashes where he was actually playing really aggressive, and he took a three-point shot, knew that the shot was off, followed it up and put it away with a dunk to end the half right at the buzzer. It was great.
Yeah, end of the half versus Notre Dame. Anyone that's listening to this obviously has seen it because you're all true Terp fans.
Right.
But
one of the most athletic
just in case
plays.
Somebody else is like sniffing others in the room.
One of the most athletic plays I've ever seen, though. So, I mean, it's not doom and gloom with Aaron. I just expect a little bit more out of him. Again, shot over 40% from three. Again, these last couple games versus Marquette and Notre Dame. We started to see him kind of get things together, but then he disappears in this game and just doesn't shoot very well.
Yep, and for me, I'm going to pull a quick one here. And as a father of twins, Brenda Fries, recruit eligible 2035, the twins are going to be one person here, and I need more out of both of them. So I did a little math here, combined their minutes, combined their points. You combine everything. They're 16 minutes a game, 5 points, 3 rebounds, 0 assists. That's not what I'm looking for out of you guys. Right. I mean, we truly need another big man to step up. We've talked about that. Obviously, we have Chol waiting to get in the folds. Hopefully, he can be healthy. That's great. But we need one or both of these guys to step up. And early in the year, we thought it was, well, before the year, we thought it was Mekhi. Mekhi right. was the guy. Mikal was just like this add-on thing. Powder puff schedule, Mekhi and Mikal looked like the same damn player.
Well,
you couldn't tell them apart.
Both physically and actually on the court.
And skills. And it showed. So, like, you look at these at the minutes, and the very first game is Temple. 19 minutes for Mekhi, and Mikal only got 1 minute. After that, their minutes were damn near identical. You got like 8 and 6, somewhere in that range.
Right.
So they ended up playing them like they were one person. So I don't think it's unfair for me to do this. And if that's a player, 16, 5, and 3, you're not getting enough production for those minutes.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I will say the only difference that I've kind of noticed from Mekhi and Mikal is that Mekhi does play a little bit more physical, I think, down low. That is the one thing that I do like about him when I see him out on the court is that he does play more of that traditional power forward center type role where he actually does bang around a little bit down low. Plays a little out of control, looks a little tight on some of his putbacks. That's why a lot of things just aren't dropping. We saw that today in this game. A lot of shots down low, easy putbacks that just weren't going in, looks a little tight. I think that's just going to come as he gets more comfortable in the offense and in the system. But I agree. This was a kid that both we had high hopes for coming in that would have a decent amount of contribution in minutes and production.
Because that's what we knew we needed. We needed a big body. We lost too much. Bruno is very difficult to replace, and obviously we're not going to just show up and Bruno's replaced, but we thought we could get a little bit more out of these guys.
Agreed.
Only time will show.
Only time will show.
Only time will show.
All right, Ryan, it's time for Only Time Will Show. Again, for those that didn't listen to last episode, this is our segment where we kind of talk about anything relating into time. We've kind of talked a little bit about minutes. We'll talk about rotations, bench usage, some future matchups that we've got coming on, because only time will tell how we'll do against those teams. So, Ryan, I'll let you kick this segment off.
So I liked how we've changed our starting lineup. So you look at this as like a three-period thing, or at least I do. So early in the year, you're just testing things out. You're seeing how guys roll with. We're trying different lineups.
Who plays with who?
Right. Then you look at the beginning of this Orlando Invitational when we're going against Temple and Harvard, and we're running a typical set. We're matching up against them. We're going bigs for bigs, guards for guards, that kind of thing. Since then, Mark Turgeon's just decided, I'm going to play my best role, and you guys got to deal with it.
Right.
If I have tiny guys out there and you got big guys out there, well, your big guys can't guard my tiny guys.
Yeah, I agree with that mentality. You're the alpha dog. You're the number three team in the country. Yeah. Why are you adjusting your lineup to match up with someone else's lineup? Put your best guys out there and make them stop them.
And we're putting 3 to 4 guards out there. I mean, depending on how you look at what Marcel is. You know, if he plays like a guard and a forward at times, and I've seen him listed as both, depending on what sites you're looking at.
Yeah, he's that guard / small forward. I like a lot of Marcel's game.
Yeah, I love a lot of it. So they've been running this small lineup, and I think it's the way to go. And again, I think it's a change in Turgeon completely. Like you said, it's alpha dog mentality.
Right.
You show you can stop me. I'm not going to adjust to what you have. You figure this out.
You know, the only thing I'll say, though, about playing a guard-heavy offense is typically when you see that, you'll see your best shooters out on the court, and I think that's my biggest issue playing so many guards right out there right now is that we're not seeing us, you know, the team shoot the lights out in the gym. We're seeing a team struggle, especially from down, you know, from deep in three, and they continue to put these shots up one after the other.
Yeah, that's true. But every one of our guards has the athletic ability to drive to the hoop. They've all shown it. They've all had posterizing dunks other than Cowan. I don't think he's had a dunk ever. He's just a tad small, but he can get to the rim over and over
again.
Yeah,
it doesn't keep him from going after the rim, for sure.
He goes at the trees either way.
Right.
So it will get better if we are hitting threes. Like we said, the spread the floor is definitely the way to make these slashes a lot easier. But at the last three games, you're talking four out of your top 5 minutes usage is our guards. So that's what we're running with, and it's working.
All right, man. So let's talk a little bit about the upcoming games. I mean, we've got some big challenges. We got another Big Ten game coming up next Tuesday against Penn State. We've got Seton Hall. That's going to be our first ranked challenge. But let's talk a little bit about this Penn State game. This is going to be our first actual road game. I mean, when you look at the Orlando Invitational, essentially that was a neutral site, but the majority of fans there were Maryland Terp fans anyway, so it was a lot like a home game in many ways.
I'm very proud of the fan attendance at the Orlando Invitational. Yeah. Everybody took advantage of that being a vacation site.
Right.
Got down there, saw some Disney, and saw some Terps basketball. We made that a home court atmosphere.
Terp Nation travels well, apparently, so that was good. But look, Penn State had a big game today against Ohio State. Ohio State's the real deal. I know a lot of people think that they're just a football school, but they're not. They're a legit basketball school. You know, they were big back in the day, had a, you know, 10, 20 year hiatus from basketball, from being really good and competitive, but they're back. I mean, they're going to be a top 10 team this year for sure throughout the entire season. They put a whooping on Penn State today, but what can we expect from this team with our first road game?
Yeah, so Penn State's going to be a real test. Like I said, first away game. They got another big guy that Jalen Smith's going to have to deal with. Mike Watkins, the senior forward, 6'9", 254. 24 minutes, 11 points, 10 rebounds, and 4 blocks a game. So it's a traditional big man there for you. So hopefully he can muscle up on that. Was not the easiest test today with a very similar sized opponent. Next guy, big guy, well, I guess will probably be a Daryl Morsell matchup here. Mr. Lamar Stevens, senior forward, 6'8", 225. And he's their leading scorer, 29 minutes a game, 18 points, 8 rebounds. Big thing Ohio State took care of today is he fouled out early. So I watched this game. It was very interesting. When he fouled out with 13 minutes left. The team was only down 10. They lost by over 30.
Oh, wow.
So today, we had two big men on the hook for 4 fouls with 8 minutes left. And me and you were chanting at the TV.
Right.
Drive at them. Why are you fading away? What, Cowan would have the ball right from it and faded away. Morsell had it and didn't drive at him. When you got somebody on the line like that, you got to go to his body and get that fifth foul.
Right. And as often as they were blowing the whistle, I mean,
how did we not get them to foul out? Yeah. There were more fouls called in this game than at least, I don't know, the last 3 combined. It was that's why the next game had to be played on the ESPN app, because there wasn't enough time to put it in. But we definitely need to get to this guy and get him out early. And I think Morsell is the man to defend him. And then we'll have to see what it is on the offensive side.
Yeah. And you know, the thing with Penn State is too, they're another team that's got some depth. Off the bench, they've got some shooters, some guys that can put up the shot from 3. So we're going to have to make sure that we're defending the perimeter as well. We can't just get caught up on making sure that we're stopping the big guys down low, because they will pick you apart from the perimeter.
Absolutely. The guard play here is really deep, and they're going to be fresh all game. So they play 5 guards 19 minutes or more on this lineup, 2 of which really let it fly from anywhere on the field. You got Miles Dredd shooting 31% from 3. And Myron Jones shooting over 40% from 3. Those two combined for 105 3-point attempts, exactly half of the team's 210 attempts over this 8 games.
And that's what I'm saying. If you leave those guys unguarded and you just focus down low, it kind of gets the Terps away from what's been working for them. And it's just they're playing good team defense. They're moving to the ball. They're following the ball. And I think that's what they need to continue to do. Defensively, I've got no qualms with what the Terps are doing.
So what are you worried about in this game?
I think for me, the biggest thing is going to be getting open shots, meaning running designed plays, getting people in spaces where they actually can square their shoulders up, set their feet, and get good looks and good shots. That's where I want to see this team improve. There's been way too much taking shots on the move, kind of wild looks, playing a little bit too fast. Instead of what you see in the second half, the difference is, and I heard somebody make a comment about this on air, when they're actually playing in front of their bench, which is always in the second half, when they're playing in front of their bench, Turgeon can communicate easier with his team to help get people in places where they need to be, and that's where you see them start playing better. I think if the Terps can communicate better on the court early on in the first half, then they won't have this issue of playing from behind and having to come back and getting off to these slow starts.
So we'll be the away team this game. Does that mean we go for a hell of a run because we're in front of our bench to start and then we die off in the second half? And
I don't know. It's going to be an interesting kind of, I guess, spin on things because we haven't seen how they've done so far that way.
I'm interested to know whether we were the home or away team in the Marquette game to see whether that
plays true
to what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's definitely something I want to look into. I'm worried that all of these things you're describing are because we are a very young team. You have the senior leadership in Cowan, and then you have the junior in Morcell, and the rest are freshmen and sophomores.
Right.
Now, our sophomores are older than almost everyone else's sophomores because an awful lot of them played last year serious minutes. But we got a lot of freshmen. They're still sophomores. This is our very first away test as the number three team in the country when everybody giving you their best shot and every fan in that building wants to see the Giant fall.
Right. Well, here's the thing. We're going to have to get used to this because every year it seems like Turgeon kind of steps the ante up as far as recruiting goes, getting a lot of five stars and that kind of thing, some guys that are one and done type things. This is just kind of the way of basketball. It's rare to see veteran, quote unquote, teams in college basketball anymore because players come and go so quickly. Most players are here maybe till their sophomore year and then they leave. So this whole, you know, yes, we are a young team. I think it's just going to be a tradition that we're going to have to get used to because the likes of the Brunos and even, you know, Jalen Smith, those kind of guys, they're only going to be here a couple years and then they're going to be leaving. You'll have these one in a wild type players like a Cowan, who's a very productive college player, probably won't make too much out of himself at the next level, that may stay their junior and senior year. But I think this is just kind of the way of college basketball now.
Yeah, and then you always have the mid-majors that really make noise with the transfer portal where they put four senior transfers together or who a lot of the guys are that were hanging on their team, and you got grown men playing against boys, so they end up with a really good record and highly ranked in the tournament, but then they usually get beat because there's younger talent somewhere. There's a reason you were still there in your fourth year, but usually it works out pretty well during the regular season.
Well, you brought up a key word there, transfer portal. We've heard that a lot recently, more so on the football side of things.
No. We're a basketball school. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, we are a basketball school.
Oh, we have a football team. Yeah, you're right. I forgot.
We do have a football team.
My first love, the Maryland football team.
Well, you know, you and I were kind of nervous there for a little while. We always kind of get nervous around this time of year. You don't know who's going to come and who's going to go, that kind of thing.
When you hear 15 people are expected to enter the transfer portal, you get a little nervous who those 15 are.
But I'll be honest, so far, out of the names that have gone to the transfer portal, I think the biggest loss is probably going to be the Gaddy twins. And even they, to a point, really didn't have the production that we expected from two four-star players coming in, four-star linemen, that one of which couldn't figure out what side of the ball they were going to use him on, offensive side or defensive side. Then it got to the point where he just didn't play.
We were so excited when he moved to the offensive line because we're like, this could be life-changing.
Right.
If he goes to the offensive line, like obviously he's seen something in him and he can create this NFL player and become this mastermind for making this switch.
I don't even think he saw the field.
Like he saw the field, but it was not for productive minutes. Not that many people on our line were productive this year. But yeah, they're the biggest loss, and it's not much of one. Me and Fred talked. We didn't know this transfer portal was going to happen so fast. Yeah. We wanted to do, when we heard it was 15 people, we wanted to do our little draft of picking worst-case scenarios of what these names would be. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't have drafted any of these people in my picks for 15.
No, I mean, I'll be honest with you. Half of these guys, I didn't even know who they were. Guys that, you know, have never saw the field, guys that probably won't see the field moving forward, they're going to go to some of these smaller colleges where they'll actually get some playing time, and rightfully so. I mean, when you're an athlete, you want to play. It's great that you went to a Division I school, a 1A school, but if you can go start on a 1AA school, why not? I mean, you can only get one shot at college football.
And two of them were preferred walk-ons. So all that means is that they met with Loxley, as he said he was going to meet with everyone on the team and tell them what their expectations were for the team, both academically and athletically. And the preferred walk-ons were just told, we're not going to extend you a scholarship.
Right.
I mean, that's really clear cut with that. You then had eight scholarship players transferring, again, two of them being the Gaddy brothers, and some backup tight ends and backup DBs.
Well, the one guy I think that kind of, I don't want to say caught me by surprise, but the one name I knew for sure that I was kind of like, that hurts a little bit, Carlos Carrier. He was a guy that saw the field, played, you know, some pretty productive minutes when they actually threw the ball this year. But he was a guy that I thought could potentially have a role on this team next year, but he's not going to be here. And look, we've got some new guys coming in, some guys from last year's recruitment class, Isaiah Hazel being a guy who's going to take up some time. Dante Demas, hopefully he will be
still here,
and
he
that
would have
much
been
better.
One of the ones drafted in our picks, so we're still holding on. We haven't gotten to 15 names yet.
No,
so there's still, if 15 was accurate, we still have three more names coming.
Right.
So let's just put it out there. I don't want that name to be Nick Cross. I don't want that name to be Dante Demas. And I don't want that name to be Lance Legend.
Right.
There's a couple others that would kind of hurt. But those are the three that I would just be like bent over holding my stomach in pain.
I think the most painful news of late was two guys that were crucial pieces to this team. And two guys that I wish nothing but the best moving forward. Hope they have long careers at the next level. Anthony McFarland and Javon Leak both declare for the NFL draft.
Yep, that one did hurt, but that is your job as a college player, is to get into the NFL, and that's your job as a college coach, is to put them in the NFL. So I can't fault us for losing people to the league.
Yeah,
I can't hold that against anyone. The people that are losing their mind, acting like the sky is falling and saying fire Loxley because of this period, like because of the season, I understand it, but I don't agree with you. When people are using this transfer portal period as an example why we need to get rid of him, we didn't lose anybody that he wanted to keep. And the two guys that he did are going to the league. That's his job.
Right.
That's part of the recruiting, is showing how many Terps are in the league.
That's
beneficial.
And if we've done anything as a university over the last 10 years, is we've done pretty good at getting running backs here and being productive running backs, both at the running back position and in the return game. I mean, we've had some really, really good talent there. So I'm not too upset about it. Yeah, Javon Leak would have been nice to have him back for another year. Of course, he was an explosive athlete.
Amazing talent.
Yeah, I mean, all around great player. Seemed like a good kid as well. Anthony McFarland, great kid as well. Good, great athlete. I just don't think that this offensive system fits his skill set the best. I think when all is said and done, I do think Anthony McFarland will have the better NFL career than Javon Leak. And I think he's just got to go to the right system in the NFL. He's got the shiftiness and he's got the athleticism and the speed to make it at the next level.
The Saints. It's the only place he's going to make it, right? That's the only one that runs that back.
I don't know. I think we're going to see a big transition in the NFL with everything that's kind of happened with Lamar Jackson and with this running style and this kind of almost like wing T style offense, this high school style offense. We're going to see a lot more value in running backs that we haven't seen. You know, for years, running backs were always taken in the top echelon of the draft year in and year out. Over the last 10 to 15 years, that's kind of gotten fewer and farther because people feel like they can get good running back value later rounds, fourth round, fifth round, sixth round. I think we're going to start seeing that change again in the NFL because of this new offensive system and because of players like Anthony McFarland who could really benefit in a system like that.
Yeah. So we're going to get into this deeper when we get close to the NFL draft, but I need to get your guess. What round are these guys going? What day are these guys going? However detailed you want to get into it.
Day two. I think these guys, Javon Leak.
That's second and third round.
I'm sorry. All right. If we're going, day three then. I think Javon Leak, I think, could crack lower round three. I think Anthony McFarland's probably a 4-5. But I think Javon Leak is a 3-4. I think he could be as high as a low third round pick. That's just early projections. It's all going to change when he goes to the combine.
So were they three rounds better than Ty Johnson was last year?
I think Javon Leak is for sure. And I think the athleticism and potential of Anthony McFarland will get teams excited.
Okay.
That's just my take on it right now.
I mean, I think they both make the league. I'm hesitant after what happened with our middle linebacker last year going undrafted, and with Ty Johnson going to the seventh round, and not to mention Prince not being drafted. We have thought a lot more people were going.
Here's the thing: look at what Ty Johnson did last year behind a much better offensive line, and what Javon Leak did this year with a crap offensive line.
Yeah, it was really bad. So Javon Leak, I think you're right. Anthony McFarland was good behind a very, at least above average offensive line. I mean, you had two people that at least sniffed the league on there, and then two more starters that are the only bright spots on this line.
Right.
So of course the injury this year just doesn't give him a fair shot. Right. It just doesn't. So if they're just going to completely ignore this year, other than the Michigan State game where he blew up like he was nothing, and I guess you can count the Rutgers game, but that looked like we were playing against a wet paper bag compared to the rest of our schedule, then it's going to be really difficult. But, I mean, I really hope the best for him. I really hope I'm wrong. I hope they're both second-round picks, and we really do see him on.
I think second round is a little bit
a
little wishful thinking. But I do think, again, how they line up at the scouting combine, how they run their 40 times, how they perform there is going to really determine where they get drafted in this draft. I think Javon Leak's that potential high 4.3, 4.4 speed. I think if he can flash like a 4.40 or a 4.39 type speed at the 40-yard line like Ty Johnson did, again, what he did this year behind a crappier offensive line, I think – teams will value him in the third or fourth round.
Do you think they both get invited to the NFL Combine?
Yes, 100%. 100% both of them are at the Combine.
Okay. I'm not quite as confident. So
we'll see.
I think you kind of have to. I mean, McFarland doesn't have the stats to suggest he should be there because he's not.
This year. Because, he did last year.
Because of the injury. But I think he is one of the number one players that could benefit from the measurables because he is so damn fast and quick and change of directions,
right,
that he would do very well at the combine. And apparently he's our quote strongest running back too, since they were running him on fourth down against Temple every time. And Loxley was very offended that we didn't think he was the best short yardage back. So that would be interesting to see him in the combine doing some of that stuff too.
All right. Well, now that we know that these guys are gone, we got to start thinking future. Right, we've got a couple of guys that we picked up in this recruiting class that look promising. The guy Penny, I think his name is, he looks pretty good.
Jackson, those and are Jackson, two running backs to replace right. him so far.
So they look good. We'll see what happens once they actually get into the university and they get into camp and they get into shape. But this is a huge recruiting weekend for the Terps. Speaking of incoming talent, we got a boatload of kids that are on campus right now, somewhere in the neighborhood of like 12 to 15 kids right now. One of those kids is LSU commit and local prospect wide receiver Rakim Jarrett. How do you see, this visit going in a way that could potentially land him here at the University of Maryland?
I'm really starting to feel that this is going to be our Nick Cross moment, our Stephon Diggs moment, his late flip that he's so accustomed to having. I mean, you see him in a selfie on Twitter yesterday with him and his mom and Loxley, and all three of them look awfully happy, especially mom and Loxley. And from everything I'm hearing, mom's making this decision. So that he took the same route with Nick Cross last year. Nick was going to Florida State in his decision. And per reports, mom wanted him at Maryland, and he's at Maryland. I think this could go very similar, and I'd be very happy with it. It's not our biggest need. We still have a ton of wide receiver talent here.
Yeah.
It's the only thing we have talent in, really, with Jashawn Jones and Demas. And
but that's why I want to bring him up, right? So if we get a commit like a Rakim Jarrett, a five-star wide receiver, do we see a trickle-down effect maybe for some other local kids, some other offensive linemen, which is obviously critical to this, going to be critical to this team's success. Do we see a trickle-down effect where people might follow him?
That's the biggest benefit, and that's why he's still being recruited this hard. Right. It's because Locksley probably believes this is the best chance at a top-tier Maryland player he has based on whatever interactions he's had in the past.
Right.
And he wants to bring them in and hope the rest follow. And big weekends like this, you know, we haven't had a lot of positive news. We've had losses after losses. We've had all these transfers out. The guys on campus, we got a ton of JUCO talent. You know, we had Paris Heath last year coming out of JUCO, 2 years to play, 2 years. He didn't even see the field.
No.
So, and I thought he could be really beneficial with his size and stats. But, and these guys might be the same thing, but if you get 5-6 commits like we're hearing from this group of 12 to 15 people, that's positive news for this program. If Rakeem Jarrett signs or an early signing period with the Terps, that's huge positive news. And guys that were about to sign their letter of intent goes, maybe I should wait till signing day and see what Maryland does the next 3 months. See what's happening around here. Because right now there's no reason for them to change their mind. We've given them nothing.
Right.
So when you get Ruben Hippolyte actually signing the dotted line on December 20th, and when a bunch of these guys get in here, you start getting some snowball effect, and let's get this thing going.
Speaking of Ruben, I think you were sweating a little bit with a certain tweet that got put out the other day.
Ruben, if you hear this, you made me wet myself. Let me tell you, Ruben Hippolyte tweets, can I get somebody make me an edit real quick? And I immediately sent that screenshot to Fred.
Yeah, it freaked me out too.
And what do you want an edit for, man? Yeah. We just had like all these people transfer out. Now Ruben Hippolyte wants an edit. I'm like, oh no, is he going to announce his commitment somewhere else? Well, thankfully, I hope this is what it is. It looks like it is. He's put out multiple edits since this tweet. He was elected to the USA game, where it's a game of all USA players versus international players, right. Which who knew there were that many international players that they could field a squad against us. I feel like the U.S. going to stomp some boys. We certainly got the numbers, and we got the best linebacker there is.
Right. Yeah. So, look, there's definitely some things to be excited about with this university. I know it's hard right now. We're just coming off of one of the worst seasons that we've had in a while, a 3-win season. Look, I guess Vegas got it right.
Vegas got it right.
We talked about it early in the year. Thank God we didn't put any money on that.
I was so ready.
Right.
I was so ready. And can you imagine, like, what if Vegas just had the nuts to just be like, yeah, you guys won your first game by a combined 150 points. We'll still let you take the 3 wins or under bet. How many people would have lined up in that line? They could have bankrupted the whole state.
I'll never question Vegas again. Like that was one of the layups. Like the one that I thought, oh, there's no way this team doesn't win at least 4 games. I see this team winning 6 or 7 games. Then they come out the gates the way they did on those first two opponents, taking down Syracuse 50-something to, 13 or whatever it was.
Well, that's how he said Syracuse that day. Syracuse! Now it's like Syracuse.
Right.
Like, nobody cares. Like, the ACC, again, has proven that they are not a football conference.
Right.
They have Clemson, and that makes them relevant because they have Clemson. So, you know, nobody wants to call everyone wants to say basketball school, and everyone wants to say football school, and then apparently it's not true because, you know, your football schools of Ohio State has an awfully good basketball team, number 6 in the country, number 1 in the country.
Right.
It's apparently a lot easier, I guess, because it doesn't take as many players to make a squad. You can flip basketball a lot faster. So
yeah,
maybe someday we'll be in that Ohio State, Florida, Michigan State where you can't really say they're a football or basketball school. I want to be in that window.
We can all dream, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not asking for the world. We're never going to be number
one. At this point, you're asking for the world.
I'm not going to be in the playoff. I want to finish the year ranked 20 to 30, like every year.
Yeah, that's reasonable. And I
want to finish in the top 10 once every decade. Like, that's my goal. That'd be awesome.
Right.
But right now, we're finishing the bottom 10. Now, I'm hearing a lot of talk that we're going to be looking up at Rutgers next year. That's the only thing that I don't want to do. Yeah. I don't want to be the worst team in the Big Ten.
I hope not.
For God's sake, can we at least hold off one team in the Big Ten?
I mean, just go back to the ACC?
We don't need to go back in the ACC.
For so many reasons.
The money's so good. We would never have the developments that they're having around there.
I know. That's very true.
Someday this move will pay off. I do absolutely miss winning football games. And I miss the traditional rivalries that and the overrated teams of Florida State and Miami every year that let us have wins against top 10 teams. Because when there's a Big Ten team coming in ranked, I haven't seen an overrated one yet. But I remember plenty of overrated ACC teams.
No, that's very true. I don't know, man. I'm optimistic. You know, we've heard some rumblings out there that there's going to be a flurry of recruits that are going to be committing over the next couple of days, over this weekend. Hopefully some of these guys, some of these JUCO guys are offensive linemen. I've been saying that over and over again. Hopefully there's some guys in there that end up making that switch.
So you got an offensive lineman, a Johari Branch, 6'3", 325. So that's a legit Big Ten size.
Yeah, I like that size.
So you got that going on. Kobe Rios, which we made his top three, I think I saw on Twitter.
Okay.
That's a good thing.
That dude's
six,
big,
300.
Too. Yeah.
So we definitely got some linemen in, some defensive tackle. Amai Finu, 6'2", 320 at Independence Community College. All these guys are on campus this weekend. And we've heard that there's at least one that's committing and up to six in the next 3 days. If that doesn't come true, then I'm going to beat my head against a wall for a while because people seem real confident that at least one of these boys is coming, and I'm hoping it's a flurry.
You know, it's kind of crazy to me. I never realized how much flurry there is through this transfer portal. Like, I just never realized how many players actually do go through that process. I mean, there's so many players from different colleges that are still on the fence of whether they're going to be transferring out or not, that if they do, even if we don't get some commits over the next couple of days, I don't think all is bad. I still think that there's plenty of talent out there that'll open up its door for us.
Yeah, and I do want to put out, I still don't believe, with all the history of Maryland, I think both our DUI players will not be on this squad. They haven't been announced yet. You would have thought they would have been first to cut if they were, so maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is a new leaf. Maybe this whole Loxley family thing, you can't abandon family just because they made a mistake. Maybe that's for coming through, but as far as the 20 years of my history with Maryland football and basketball, usually these would be the first heads to roll. And when you're talking JUCO route, not all of them, but some of them are there because of either grades or making some poor decisions too, because they obviously have the talent to play Big Ten football if they're coming playing now. Right. So you gotta get this under wraps, whether they stay or go. You gotta make sure that we don't just like lose the locker room completely. You gotta get some structure involved. And with the school hamstringing Loxley and not letting them run for punishment, not letting there be any like punitive physical things, you got to come up with some creative ways to do it, because that's all these guys pretty much know. That's what every high school coach in the country does. You run laps, you do push-ups,
right?
You do, there's a physical punishment. I was watching today on the preview for the Ohio State Wisconsin game, a previous Urban Meyer player said that everything was a competition in the league. It was hyper. You would have to run in the cafeteria, and the last one to finish their Gatorade had to do push-ups in front of everybody.
Right.
Like, there's a punitive level of football. So if they're not allowed to do any of that, you're going to have to get real creative. You got to get some sports psychologists in here to figure something out.
Something's got to change. I mean, it's not with just football. It's society as a whole has just gotten really soft, and it's trickling down even at the football ranks. It's sad because, I mean, you know, I'm a little older. I'm 37, right? So I grew up in a time where our coaches, they rode our ass. Even at the, you know, even at the peewee levels, these guys were yelling at us, you know, making us run hills if we weren't listening, making us run laps if we weren't listening, like held us to a standard. And there were consequences if you weren't participating the way you were supposed to. And you can't not have that in place. I get it that the spotlight's on the university right now and they're really trying to mind their P's and Q's. But at the end of the day, if you want to get the most out of your squad, you got to be able to discipline to a certain extent and not have the fear that there's going to be some kind of repercussion from it.
Yeah, and I don't know how you can be mad at somebody that for not disciplining his team when he's been told he can't discipline his team. So if there's any reports true to that, which I'm certain that that's true, then we need to give it a break and see what we can do with this. Right. Maybe it'll loosen up the reins a little bit now that we're a year removed. It's a terrible situation you never want to see happen again, but I don't really think the exercise was the problem with it. I think it was everything else surrounding it. Right. It was all the mistakes made thereafter as well.
All right. Well, we appreciate you guys tuning in as always. If you've got a question or something that you want to submit to the show, make sure you hit us up on our email at shellandtellpod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow the show at shellandtellpod. You can follow Ryan at TerpsBSpert, and you can follow me at FredBLBS. If you haven't yet, make sure you subscribe on all the podcast platforms out there. We're on iTunes, we're on Google Podcasts, we're on Spotify, and more. You can also follow us on YouTube. Hit that subscribe button and hit that bell button for any videos or any podcasts that we have. You'll get that notification. Appreciate you tuning in. Sign us off, Ryan.
Hey, it's a really big time of year. You got the number three basketball squad with their first away game. You got the early signing period and a huge recruiting weekend. So until next time, here's to wishing all is well under the shell.